To tell you the truth, I like it better than I like 4-year-old bourbon. Because it's
you gotta be in the mood for something like that.
It's cleaner,
this
actually.
Is much better.
It's yeah, really good. Yeah, you can clean a toilet bowl with it. You could.
This podcast of Bourbon Pursuit is in partnership with thewhiskeywash.com, a lifestyle website for news and reviews for people who like whiskey. And for those who think a life without whiskey has no style, thewhiskeywash.com. Welcome back to another episode of the Bourbon Pursuit Podcast. My name is Kenny, and I've got Ryan here today. And as everybody knows by now, Ryan is from Bardstown, Kentucky.
Have I said that already?
I think you've said it quite a few times.
Yeah, so as you know, I'm from Bardstown, and my family is deeply involved in the industry, and I'm happy today we are visiting a close family member of mine, my uncle Patrick. He owns Promotional Wood Products, and they do all types of stuff with boxes for special releases, barrel heads, I mean, you name it, any bourbon brand they've dealt with. So I'm really excited to get him on the show. I've been wanting to do it for a while, and glad we could hook up today.
Absolutely. So with that, let's go ahead and kick off the show. So today we have Patrick Hutchins. Patrick is the owner of Promotional Wood Products. So Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Good.
Glad to be here.
Good. So first off, we want to kind of know, how did you get into bourbon in the first place? Not even Promotional Wood Products. Let's kind of save that for a later topic. But what was your first affinity with bourbon?
Well, I wouldn't call it an affinity, I suppose. I'm like a lot of people, 18, 19 years old, and it was whiskey then. So, you know, a party, and somebody was passing around a bottle. So I had a pretty bad experience. It probably went 10 or 15 years without ever touching it again. But then everybody grows up. So at some point in time, discovered what a wonderful thing we had right here in our back door, you know. So there's so many great bourbons, and probably began enjoying bourbon with some friends back in the 80s and the 90s. And so I'm telling my age there, I suppose.
Back before it was cool, like every hipster, right?
Before I was born.
Well, I grew up here in Boston, Nelson County. One of my best friends, his father was a plant manager of Beam's Distillery. So I was around Booker. I was around Don Calhoun and folks who were making bourbon a big thing back in the 80s, even before Booker had come out with his own signature product. You know, he was an interesting person, and just him alone as an advocate draws you into the whole mystique of bourbon. To know him personally was a thrill. You know, he was quite a person.
Right. So even you are into bourbon, and we actually have an opportunity to sample on something of a barrel you picked. Do you want to kind of talk about what we're drinking on right now?
Yeah, yeah. I often, as someone who makes point-of-sale products and items for the bourbon industry, packaging, et cetera, always wished that I could buy a bottle of bourbon. I should rephrase that, a barrel of bourbon.
I was about to say, everybody can buy a bottle.
Everybody can buy a bottle, yeah. But we finally couldn't afford to do that, you know. But last year, at the invitation of someone from Beams, someone who works there, we went and split a barrel three ways. My brother, my partner, Charlie, and a gentleman named Jerry Summers, we went and purchased a barrel of Knob Creek. We went through the whole process. I'd seen it at a distance, but I'd never been involved in it. We brought friends from work, some of the folks who work here, and we had Fred Noe there with us to help with the selection, although he remained neutral because he felt like he didn't want to influence our decision. But a long story short, we chose one of five barrels. We chose barrel number two unanimously, nine people. So we felt like we chose a good product. It was 11 years and 2 days old, and it was 138 proof. Of course, it had to be cut to 120 and bottled. So anyway, quite a thrill.
You missed your calling. You should have been a master distiller. It's pretty good stuff.
Yeah. It, you know, I didn't make the decision alone, so I felt safe in numbers. You know, there were nine of us. Surely we're all going to pick a good bourbon, you know, and I believe we did, yeah.
There's always a panel involved.
That's right. That's
so
right.
Talk about promotional wood products. So what is your company and what is it that you do?
We make point of sale and packaging for the wine and spirit industry. We're not really just limited to bourbon, although the explosion in interest in bourbon over the last 7 or 8 years has made that probably 80% of the wine and spirit that we do business with. But there are some premium tequilas, some vodkas and things. We make point of sale packaging for. Inside of marketing and advertising, there's always the question, how do we sell our product? How do we pitch it? And you can do that through mass advertising in magazines, on billboards. But the proven way to catch the customer is when they walk in the door. So the better your package looks, the better. And we
see it on the shelf.
Yeah, you see it. And you already know, that's the thing about bourbon drinkers today. Maybe not so 20 or 30 years ago, but today they know what they like. They know what they want to buy. So they know what brands are worth buying. They know when it's a gimmick, but they walk in and you catch their eye on the top shelf. And that's what we do. So we make a package, a wood box for Booker's bourbon. We Knob Creek. We've done so many over the years. I have a hard time remembering them all.
What did we see when we went through here?
There's
we saw
Russell's Reserve.
Russell's Reserve 98, the Wild Turkey Diamond, the, you know, those Colonel
old, the Colonel Taylor boxes,
The boxes that all the cured oaks came in that people went crazy for, and they actually got to the store because that was actually what it delivered in, and people were like, well, can I have the box too?
Yeah, because it's really cool. It looks like a package from the 20s or, you know, pre-prohibition or whatever.
And so, then liquor store owners found out they could sell the box at that point.
So Booker's was kind of like the first premium bourbon. Did they approach you about making the box or did
no,
you? How did that relationship kind of hook get together?
You know, that's funny. Even though we were close friends, Booker never approached us. I never thought of that until you just said that. But we were in the cabinet business. We were making casework kitchen cabinets, and we did a few things for businesses, including Beams around here. But we had someone approach us, a purchasing agent at Beams. They were looking for a little box to put a bottle of bourbon in, and our first instinct, our first reply was, well, we wouldn't be interested in that. You know, we make these beautiful cabinets, and we don't make boxes. And the young lady told us that she was looking for 100,000 of them. And
so, like, yes, we'll do that.
All of a sudden, they piqued our interest. And after that, we really dug into it and realized that we could do this profitably. So, and that was 22 years ago. So we've been building the Booker box for 22 years. We've made millions of Booker boxes, you know.
Kind of talk about the scale of how that's grown since 22 years.
Yeah. Well, I think it's fair to say that when we first delved into the bourbon industry away from the casework, the cabinet business, you could see how they were marketing the product. And this may sound disparaging, but the packaging tended to be hillbilly-esque, you know, little log cabins with a bottle of bourbon in it or something like that. Credit to like Bill Samuels and Maker's Mark to develop a package that looked good. The red wax became recognizable. Then Booker came out with his signature bourbon, his personal bourbon, and putting it in a value-add package was the right move for bourbon. And even the language we use, if you grew up here in the 70s or the 80s, it was whiskey. Somewhere along the line, even the natives transitioned to bourbon, and which I like.
Sounds a lot cooler.
It does. It's a much better description. It is. It's a special thing. Whiskey is such a big topic, and bourbon is basically just here, you know. So even our language changed around those gentlemen and their foresight, you know. So that was where it started. We made some odd little packages, but we've watched it evolve now into a premium, and deservedly so. Bourbon is a special thing. It's unique, and some of these bottlings are truly great. I mean, they are, you know, you get a bottle of it, and then you instantly put it up behind a door because I'm not going to drink this all at once, you know.
Right.
So it's helped me to discover this really great product that's right in our back door, you know.
Well, you said at the very beginning when we came here that now you're doing close to almost 500,000 Booker's boxes per year.
Mm-hmm.
What was it when you first started? Was it like, we just need 50, or you said 100, or whatever
it was? 100,000 was the first order, which was a lot. And that probably took, we were doing about 6,000 or 8,000 a month or so at that time. And then it's steadily grown since then. But we've seen a huge movement over the past 5 or 6 years to where we went to 150,000, then we went to 200,000, then 300,000 in 2012 to 350, then 400,000. Now it looks like this year we'll probably top out 500,000 of just the Booker box. And then we still have other packages that we do for premium bourbon and also for craft beer. There's some packaging we're doing there too, because that's become recognized as a nice product, especially the bourbon barrel ales.
Yes. Yeah, if you're going to buy a $65 Goose Island.
The Goose Island Rare. Yes,
you might as well get a nice box with it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I guess that's the consolation prize.
Exactly.
I don't know what you did, but the inside of those boxes smelled terrific.
Yeah. That's funny. We actually have an additive. We have a choice of scents that we can add to our finishes. And the reason you do that is because the solvent for stain is lacquer-based, an oil-based product, and it doesn't smell great. So we can add bubble gum flavor, we can add vanilla. In that case, I think it was cinnamon. And you can add a scent to the drums of finish, and it just helps to make it a little more enjoyable to breathe, I guess.
Well, kind of talk about the whole process from start to finish of, let's just say, because your big ticket item is the Booker box, right? That's your kind of main staple. Mm-hmm. So kind of talk about the process from start to finish of what it looks like from raw wood to the finished product.
We're a complete self-contained business. We can mill all of our own material. So we can buy semi-loads of hardwoods, which we'll run through a milling process. In the case of Booker's, it has that stain on it, so you can use different species of hardwood. So we can use a poplar, or we can use aspen, whatever's available to us at the time. Even basswood, we'll mill that material down and pallet that up in parts. That'll go to an assembly process, and it's all pretty automated. We're well aware that we're competing with what we call global imports, or we can say China,
emerging markets, or
there's so many words, so many ways to pretty that up. But it's difficult to be an American manufacturer, downright impossible. But we found ways to automate, involve our team members, and they share responsibility and they share in the rewards. So it's kind of a new approach. Well, maybe not. It's a novel approach, I'd say that. So everyone here is invested to make sure that we succeed. We all work very hard. But we'll go through that process and automate everything along the way as we can, because, like I said, we know who we're competing with.
Well, I think it makes it a lot cooler story, too, if the boxes are made here in Boston, Kentucky, right around bourbon country versus over in some factory in China or whatever.
Exactly. And it's some companies stress they want it made in the USA because of the nature of the product. It is bourbon,
Right. Yeah, it's America's, spirit or whatever, so might as well keep everything else here.
So I guess another question is, so you've had that contract, you started doing it 22 years ago, and Ryan and I got a chance to, you gave us a tour of what it was, where we see three pieces of wood that just start out as nothing. They're just kind of just three blank pieces. They go through a few different machines. They get stamped with the Booker's. Actually, not even stamped. They're branded, right?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, branded, it's a branding
problem. Branded with the Booker's name. Then it goes through a process where they get stapled and put together. Then it goes through this huge conveyor belt system where it goes and as you said, the box is not dipped into the stain. However, the stain is actually raised up and actually mm-hmm. into the box, which is really interesting. So how have you tried to perfect this process over 20 years? And has it been something that you're continually learning on a day-to-day basis to try to figure out, which part can we automate even further?
Absolutely. Without sounding a little cold, we are capitalists here. We're,
right.
we're here to make money. Automating the process, speeding up the process, makes the company more profitable. And so that's any manufacturer, any business, that's the goal. You either make money or you're no longer in business, frankly. Exactly. We are always automating that process. And I would call that continual learning. You know, we never stop learning. And you think you found the last best idea, and then somebody working here will walk up and say, what if you move this here? And bam, production goes up 5%. You know, you're always looking for that continuously.
And since you kind of perfected, you know, this Booker's process, it's kind of led you into other paths, you know, with the barrel heads and other promotional products. Kind of talk about, you know, that process.
Yeah. We knew we were always trying to also be diverse. If you make the same thing for the same industry all the time, you run the risk of that phrase, all your eggs in one basket kind of thing. So we decided, over the last 15 years, we've looked for other products. We found a couple that we were running that were real stinkers and lost us a lot of money, you might say, manufacturing a little miniature keepsake chest for the retail industry. And that failed miserably, but we invested in some high-tech printing processes. And through those failures, you learn also. So we learned about decorating wood and different printing methods. We also were aware that bourbon was interesting in a retail manner also, that stores like Bed Bath & Beyond and Bass Pro would like to have the Jim Beam logo, those brands sell, Buffalo Trace, Wild Turkey. So we licensed a lot of brands and went out seeking retailers and developed some wall decor products. We've got, we buy used bourbon barrel heads, process those in a similar fashion the way we do Booker's, automate that as much as we can. And then we print and decorate those. We come up with quite a product line for retailers. So our products are in Bed Bath & Beyond, Cabela's, Bass Pro, and 200 or 300 small retailers across the country, along with all the visitor centers. If you go in a visitor center from George Dickel to Jim Beam to Buffalo Trace, you're going to see our products in there.
If it's wood, it's you all.
Pretty much, yeah.
So I think that was something that was really unique when you talked about earlier is your barrel head finishing process, because I have a barrel head that I got that was from Woodford. Like, it's straight from, got all the aging to it, nothing that had been sanded down. It was the original stamp on it. It started to come a little loose over time, right? So kind of talk about what you were talking about earlier with the amount of moisture that is lost in a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, we realized that right off the bat. We saw the barrel head as a vehicle for art and for licensed product branding. So we could take this piece of wood, because ultimately that's what it is, process that through our shop in an efficient manner, as opposed to the way a lot of small little hobby shops maybe take barrel heads and brand them or whatever. We turned it up a notch and perfected those. We buy the used barrel heads, run them through a dry kiln and a milling process. Then we finish those, sand those, and then we put them on a really high-tech, very expensive printer that will print digital images, high-color 1100 DPI images directly to the barrel head. We also have the option of laser engraving on the barrel head. So we also apply a back mounting panel to the barrel head, so that it doesn't crack, doesn't split, it's dried down to furniture grade, so you've got something that you can hang on the wall and you can give it to your grandkids someday.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because the barrel head I had, like you said earlier, they usually come in around 36% of moisture or whatever it is,
and then
you got to take it down to about 9% for something that isn't not going to come apart, split, crack, whatever it is.
We put those in the dry kiln, and basically there's a hose on the side of the dry kiln where the moisture comes out, and the first 20 gallons or so smells like awfully good bourbon, you know, so it's actually taking the moisture out of the barrels.
Yeah, the printer you guys have is pretty awesome. I had a picture I gave to you of me and my dad at a Pappy event, and you actually put it on a pub sign. Talk about those. I really like that product.
Yeah, today people like organic things. They like natural things. So wood is popular. Wood is popular in the same way and for the same reasons that bourbon is popular. It's real in a world full of purple vodkas and plastic crap. You know, here's something that's real, bourbon. And so the products we make are real. They're made from wood. And people also like that timeless look of things to look, have a heritage look, or a, they want it to look like they found it at a, in a antique shop or a barn, or that rough look is popular. So we've designed something that is made from plywood, but good veneer, and then we use our printer to kind of give it an antique look, and then we've licensed those brands again, and so we can apply those on there, or we can also put images, photographs onto the signs, and they've become very popular. We sell those retail also.
Do you think the boxes that you're making today is going to be like the new ceramic decanter of what came out in the 70s, right?
I know this. Have you ever seen the little Kraft cheese boxes, the little bitty things that you see them at flea markets and stuff, or any wooden box? I don't care how old it is or from another century ago. Nobody will throw a wood box away. You just will not do that. You'll take it home. You might put screws in it or nuts and bolts in your garage, and there you'll see a Booker box in somebody's garage. You know, you're in Vermont, and there's a Booker box. You know, and we actually post those on Facebook whenever we find a unique use for a Booker box. We have some I've seen made into birdhouses. I've seen a lamp made from a Booker box. I think it's kind of iconic already, you know. Who knows what they'll do with it next.
Is your goal to have every bottle of bourbon out there in some sort of box?
Actually, that's a good idea. I mean,
he's all for that.
We should definitely work towards that, you know.
So when you do put these items in boxes, I mean, do you think it really gives that aura, that feel that this is a premium product, right? And that's what mm-hmm. you're really going with by issuing that?
That, yeah, they'll use a term in marketing, a value add. Absolutely. My thought is, if the packaging is done well, it tells me that that the product inside must really be nice. And we take that very seriously. We believe that what we're doing is making the product look better. So I certainly believe it works. I can give you an example. A brother was telling me he was out shopping in a nice department store, and they had a bunch of wallets, leather wallets, piled up on a table, discounted down to 50% off or 80% off, and they were in little wooden boxes. He said the wallets were very nice, but they were in these junky wooden boxes from China that were falling apart. So the package that they came in said, "I'm a piece of crap." So what's inside wasn't selling. So we're the opposite. We believe that if we put this nice product in a nice wooden box, you know, it just tells the consumer that it is something worth buying.
Another good question, I think, and it's okay if you don't want to answer it, but what do you think? You're, as you said before, you're capitalist. You're here to make money, right? Mm-hmm. These boxes cost something. So what do you think it is when it comes to retail? What is somebody paying more for a bottle of Booker's because of the box that's coming onto it?
You know, that'd be difficult to answer. Certainly, you know my answer. Certainly, it enhances the product. I will say this. One of the great things about packaging is, especially in terms of gift giving, you can go pick a bottle off of the shelf, and a nice fine bottle of bourbon or wine or whatever. But when you deliver it to your grandfather or your uncle or whomever in a nice package, I think they are more impressed. I know that I would be more impressed when I see it delivered that way. So that it's just a personal kind of logic, but it tells me that there must be value there. It delivered in this nice wooden box.
Absolutely. I agree. I mean, my Booker's, it on my bar, it stands out, you know, cause from all the other bottles, because it's in a box, and it looks cool too, like with the stain and the brand and everything. I think it adds that extra value. And once you're done with the bottle, you can always hang on the box and use it for other stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I know we just did one, was it a diamond anniversary a couple years ago for Wild Turkey. It came in a really nice package, and those things flew off of the shelf and were gone at $140 a bottle. I have to believe that the package that it came in, the way it was delivered, enhanced the value.
another question is about the barrel heads and the coasters and stuff like that. These other kind of small little promotional products that people want to have in their man caves in their house or whatever it is. What do you think gets people excited about that kind of stuff? Is it just because it has a label on it? Is it because it's a very masculine feel? Like, what do you think is, why does people have such an attraction to these little tchotchkes, I guess you could say?
I think there's a culture is developed around bourbon, period. Here we sit. I mean, it's a topic of discussion among my friends where it may not have been a few years ago. Again, I go back to what I said about growing up in a world full of fakes. You can find anything plastic you want. You can find a knockoff of anything. You cannot find a knockoff of bourbon. We make products.
Not yet.
Well, yeah, I don't think it can be done, but we'll see. I know there are a lot of things out there, but people don't want bourbon that came from Thailand. We want our bourbon to come from Kentucky, preferably, anyway. But I just think it's a culture that is developed around something that's real and authentic. I don't think there's any. I don't think it's complicated. I think it's just that simple. And what we do is just a piece of that, a component of that.
Right. Yeah, and with bourbon, it seems like people just connect with each individual brand on a personal level for whatever reason. It's like, you know, that's my drink.
Yeah,
you know?
That's what
I
want exactly
everything.
Right.
I want everything of that in my house, on my mantle.
Yeah, and I don't know how you guys, you reveal your favorites, but, you know, there are people who think Makers is the greatest thing, and there are people who won't drink Makers. Everybody has a favorite. Everybody does. I think the smart guys are the ones who like all of it. You know, I mean, I like Knob Creek because it's the single barrel because it's complicated. I like a Bullet because it's not complicated. Maybe there's a logic in all of that. I don't know.
Who knows? We all like our brands. There's really no explanation. But the smart people probably know why. The suit and tie guys, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, analytics people.
And analytics, mm-hmm. like Kenny the Nerd.
Yeah, big data.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all big data.
I'd conclude, I'd just say that what we do for a living, we're a small business, and thank goodness for the bourbon industry. There's kind of a vindication. It's tough to be a small business guy, to make something and to make a living and eke out a living or scratch and claw your way. And then whatever happened 7 or 8 years ago, this wave of popularity of bourbon was a blessing for me personally and for my company. So, you know, I'm just glad that everybody else discovered it too.
Yeah, it's not just the bourbon companies are making all the money. You know, there's so many people impacted mm-hmm. by the bourbon industry in this state and all over the world, just, you know, from the box makers to the factory line workers to the stave maker. I mean, there's everybody.
Tour guides. You name it.
It's impacts so many
people.
You're
exactly right. I mean, right here across the road from this business is 300 acres that will be put in corn, and we know what they're going to do with that corn. Next door to us is a dry kiln that dries white oak lumber for barrel staves. The economic impact is huge.
Yeah, and it's, like you said, the past 7 or 8 years, it's just incredible. As everyone knows, I'm from Bardstown, but just to see how how much it has grown in this 7 or 8 years, it's absolutely insane. Because growing up, like you said, it was whiskey, and it was cool, but it wasn't like this.
No, it was not.
But it's definitely something that makes you proud and glad to be a part of it. You know?
Exactly.
So we'll close it out, but can you give us any tidbits or any special release boxes that you can let us know about?
Yeah, what's coming up next?
Well, we're working on Booker Rye. I know that's coming out. I think that's going to be I don't know a lot about it, really, a 12, 14-year-old rye. Is that correct? You all know?
It was Booker's, well, Fred told us it was Booker's, one of his last runs before he passed. So,
exactly.
I'm not sure on the age or whatever, but that's all we mm-hmm. know about. But it's going to be a very small release.
It's going to be in a box. We know it's going to be expensive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Booker passed away in 2004, so it has to be at least 12 years old if it was made under his watch, which tells me that the minute it's released, it will be gone.
It'll be
the
gone.
Same day.
Yep.
Well, thank you again for being on the show today. It was a great treat to actually go and see the operation. And for anybody, the listeners out there, check out our Instagram page. I'm going to have all kinds of videos where you can actually see the Booker stamp going down and getting branded and the everything that's going in the manufacturing process. It's actually really interesting to see from a fan's perspective.
Yeah, you just see that box on the shelf, but you don't realize until you get here how much quality and time is put into each individual box and even these barrel heads. I mean, the whole process is really fascinating.
It truly is. So if you like what you hear, make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Bourbon Pursuit. Like us on Facebook. And
if you have any show suggestions, feedback, please keep that coming, and we'll see you next time.